All right, get ready for this one, because today we are diving into a case that's going to raise some eyebrows. Imagine getting a life sentence for crimes that only added up to $230. I mean, it sounds unbelievable, right? But that's exactly what happened in Rummel v. Estelle. It's this 1980 Supreme Court decision that still has legal scholars debating today.
You know, what I think is so fascinating about this case is it's not just about the specifics of what Rummel did. I mean, it opens up the doors to these really fundamental questions about justice and punishment and how much leeway states really have to decide those punishments.
And that's exactly what makes it so perfect for this deep dive. I mean, whether you're a seasoned lawyer or you're just starting law school, the themes in this case are things you'll see throughout your entire legal career. We're talking about the Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual punishment, and the power of these three strikes laws.
Yeah, it really cuts to the heart of the tension between individual rights and the state's right to punish people for crimes. And of course, you know, looming over all of this is the Supreme Court, and they're trying to navigate these really, really tricky legal waters.
Okay, so before we get into all the legal arguments and everything, let's set the stage. Our main character here is William Rummel, and his story is one you definitely won't forget.
Definitely. So let's rewind the clock a little bit back in time. We're talking about three separate offenses, all nonviolent property crimes. In 1964, Rummel was convicted of credit card fraud. It was $80 worth. Then in 1969, he's convicted of forging a check for, get this, $28.36.
Okay, so we're already starting to see maybe where this cruel and unusual argument might come into play. I mean, these early crimes almost seem insignificant, especially compared to that final sentence, right?
Exactly. But then in 1973, things escalate a little bit. Rummel is convicted of felony theft by false pretenses. This time, it was for $120.75. So if you add up all three crimes, we're talking roughly $230.
Which, I mean, even back then, doesn't seem like the kind of activity that would get you a life sentence. I mean, was it just an overzealous prosecutor? What happened there?
Well, that's where Texas's three strikes law comes in. And like the name suggests, this law was serious. So under the law, any third felony conviction meant you automatically got a life sentence.
Wait, so it didn't matter what the felonies were? As long as you got three, it was an automatic life sentence. I mean, that seems incredibly harsh.
It definitely raises questions about proportionality and what punishment should be for certain crimes. And Rummel, facing that situation, he decided that he wanted to challenge what seemed like this really harsh sentence. So his argument was that this mandatory life sentence for what he considered to be these relatively small offenses violated the Eighth Amendment's ban on cruel and unusual punishment.
It's starting to sound to me like he had a pretty strong case, at least so far. I mean, those crimes don't exactly scream life sentence material. So what happened next? Did he win?
Well, a lower court actually agreed with Rummel. They said that the sentence was excessive given the nature of the crimes. It looked like he might actually win this whole thing.
So was he a free man at that point?
Not quite. The state of Texas, they weren't ready to give up. They appealed the lower court's decision, and as these things often do, it went up the ladder, and eventually the case landed in the highest court in the land, the Supreme Court. And this is where things get really interesting.
Okay, well, let's unpack what the Supreme Court had to say about all this. Did they end up agreeing with Rummel and the lower court, or did they side with Texas and say that life sentence was okay?
Well, in a decision that really surprised a lot of people, the Supreme Court reversed what the lower court said and upheld Rummel's life sentence.
Hold on. So they're saying a life sentence for what basically amounts to petty theft isn't cruel and unusual. I don't know. Having a hard time wrapping my head around that.
It is a pretty complicated decision. And it wasn't a unanimous decision, which is something we'll get to a little bit later. But to really understand how the court got there, we need to dig into some key legal ideas.
All right. Let's break it down. What was the majority's thinking on this? Why did they think this was okay?
So one of the central ideas in the court's decision was this idea of deference to state legislatures. Basically, they were saying, look, it's not the Supreme Court's job to second guess how states choose to punish criminals.
So even if a punishment seems really harsh, the court is essentially saying, like, hands off, that's the state's business. How much power does that give to states?
Well, they did say that the Eighth Amendment prohibits punishments that are grossly disproportionate. But they also said that it's a really high bar to prove something is grossly disproportionate, especially when we're talking about non-capital cases, meaning cases that don't involve the death penalty.
So they're saying Rummel's sentence isn't the same as torture or something like that, which the Eighth Amendment was designed to prevent. But still, a life sentence for $230. I mean, how can that not be grossly disproportionate?
That's where the majority pointed to the fact that Rummel could get parole after serving 12 years. They said that this possibility of getting out early kind of balanced out the severity of the initial life sentence.
So because he could get out early, the initial sentence was okay. That seems like a loophole to me.
It's definitely something that people debate, and that's where the dissenting justices come into play. But before we get to their arguments, there's one more thing about the majority's decision that I think we need to look at. It has to do with the types of crimes that Rummel was convicted of.
Okay, what else did they look at?
So the majority made a distinction between Rummel's offenses, which were all property crimes, and crimes that involve violence or a direct threat to people's lives. They argue that the state has a much bigger interest in punishing and deterring people who commit property crimes over and over because they often have a ripple effect on society as a whole.
So even though his crimes weren't violent, they were still a threat to public order. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah, exactly. And they said this threat, along with the fact that he was a repeat offender, justified the harsh sentence in their view. But as I said before, not every justice on the court agreed with this. Three justices dissented, and they dissented strongly.
All right, so we've got this split decision where the majority is upholding Rummel's sentence, but some justices are saying absolutely not. Let's talk about that dissent. Who were these justices who disagreed, and what were their main points against the majority opinion?
Well, the dissenters were Justices Powell, Brennan, and Stevens. And Justice Powell, he wrote the main dissenting opinion. He did not hold back. He called Rummel's life sentence grossly disproportionate, and he argued that it was a clear violation of the Eighth Amendment.
It's interesting how even on the Supreme Court, you can have these huge disagreements on cases like this. What was at the heart of Powell's disagreement with what the majority was saying?
Powell really focused on the fact that Rummel's crimes, even though they were technically felonies, were nonviolent and only involved small amounts of money. He said they just did not justify a life sentence, no matter how many times Rummel had been convicted before.
So Powell's basically saying the punishment needs to fit the crime. And here it seems way too harsh. Did he talk about what the majority said about parole?
Absolutely. Powell argued that the possibility of parole shouldn't matter when you're thinking about whether the initial sentence is constitutional or not. He said the court should be looking at how severe the sentence is on paper, in this case, life in prison, and not how it might actually play out, because parole isn't guaranteed.
That makes sense. It shouldn't just be about whether someone might get out early. The main question should be whether the sentence itself is fair from the start.
Right. And to really make this point clear, Powell compared Rummel's sentence to the sentences that people were getting for much more serious crimes. He pointed out that in Texas back then, some people convicted of murder could get parole sooner than Rummel could for his nonviolent crimes.
Wow, that's a pretty stark comparison. And it really shows you just how harsh the dissenters thought Rummel's sentence was. It's hard to disagree with Powell's point there.
It's definitely a strong point. It makes you think about these fundamental questions about the goals of punishment. I mean, what are we trying to do when we punish someone? Are we trying to deter them from committing more crimes, rehabilitate them, get revenge? Or is it some combination of all those things? And how do we balance all that with the idea that punishment shouldn't be too severe for the crime?
Those are big questions. And the Rummel case, with this split decision and the strong dissenting opinions, shows how hard it can be to answer those questions.
You're right. Even the Supreme Court, with all their expertise and the years of legal precedent they have to look back on, they still struggle with this stuff. And that struggle shows up in how they handle later cases about similar issues.
This is where it gets really interesting for me. Are there any other cases that build on the Rummel decision or maybe even go against it? How has this idea of cruel and unusual punishment, especially for repeat offenders, changed since the Rummel case?
Well, you're in luck. There's a case that deals with this directly. Just a few years after Rummel, in 1983, the court decided Solem v. Helm. And in this case, they actually did overturn a life sentence for a guy who repeatedly committed nonviolent offenses.
Wait, really? So they contradicted themselves just a few years later. Did they officially say the Rummel decision was wrong? What happened?
Well, it's not a direct contradiction, but it does show that the court's thinking on this stuff was starting to shift. In Solem v. Helm, the defendant, Jerry Helm, had a long record of nonviolent offenses. His last crime was writing a bad check for $100, and he got a life sentence with no chance of parole for that.
So again, we're talking about relatively small crimes on their own. What made the court decide this case differently from Rummel's case?
The main difference is that Helm's sentence was life without parole. That parole distinction, which the Rummel majority leaned on so hard, wasn't there in Helm's case. And the court, which had some new justices on it by this point, took a different view. They said that a life sentence without parole for nonviolent crimes, even if the person has a long criminal history, is cruel and unusual punishment.
So even though Rummel seemed to give states a lot of power in sentencing, Solem put some limits on that power, especially when it comes to life without parole.
That's exactly right. And this back and forth between those cases shows just how complicated these issues are. The court is always struggling to figure out things like proportionality and state power versus individual rights and what cruel and unusual punishment even means.
It seems almost like they're trying to hit a moving target. If the Supreme Court can't even decide on a clear rule, what does that mean for lawyers and judges who are trying to use these cases in real-world situations?
You've hit on one of the hardest parts about constitutional law. There's rarely a clear-cut answer. These cases often involve balancing competing interests and principles.
It makes you wonder if things might have gone differently for Rummel. If his case had gone to the Supreme Court after the Solem decision, could he have gotten a different outcome?
It's hard to know for sure, but it's a good question. The Solem case, with its focus on the fact that there was no chance of parole, does seem to show that the court was starting to think more about proportionality in cases where people get life sentences for nonviolent crimes.
And it just shows that the law is always changing. What might have been okay in 1980 might not be seen the same way today.
Exactly right. The law isn't fixed. It changes as our society and the way we think about things changes. And of course, it changes as legal decisions change.
Okay, so we've got this fascinating legal landscape. But let's not forget about the human side of things. What happened to Rummel in the end? Did he end up serving that whole life sentence?
Actually, Rummel didn't end up serving his whole life sentence. Remember, he was eligible for parole after 12 years. And in 1987, he was granted parole. He had served about 14 years.
So even though he was eventually freed, he still spent more than a decade in prison for crimes that, if they happened today, might be handled very differently.
It's definitely something to think about. These legal battles, these debates about constitutional rights and how we sentence people, they have a real impact on the individuals who are caught up in the justice system.
It's easy to get lost in all the legal stuff, but we're talking about real people's lives here.
Absolutely. And that's why cases like Rummel v. Estelle are still so important today. They force us to confront these uncomfortable questions about justice, fairness, and how the choices we make as a society can have long-lasting effects.
Yeah, it definitely makes you think. And, you know, even after talking about all the legal stuff, it still feels kind of subjective to me. Like, where do you actually draw the line between a sentence that's tough but fair and one that's really cruel and unusual? It feels like there's so much gray area there.
Yeah.
You've hit on something really important. When it comes to the Eighth Amendment, there's no easy answer, no clear-cut rule. It's all about weighing different things, considering the details of each case, and ultimately trying to figure out what true justice really means.
Which I guess brings us back to William Rummel. Even all these years later, his case still makes us think. It makes us ask, what's the point of punishment anyway? Is it about getting back at someone, deterring them, rehabilitating them, or is it all those things mixed together? And then how do you balance all that with the idea that the punishment should fit the crime?
Those are questions that every society struggles with. And there are no easy answers. The Rummel case, with the justices split and those passionate dissenting opinions, I think it reflects how hard it is to figure all that out.
It really shows the tension that exists in our legal system, doesn't it? I mean, we want to keep people safe and make sure people are held accountable for the things they do, but we also want to protect individual rights and make sure the punishments are fair and just.
It's a constant balancing act. And I think the Rummel case, along with cases like Solem v. Helm that came after it, reminds us that this balancing act is never really over. The law isn't static. It's always changing as we figure out these big questions.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about Rummel v. Estelle, looked at the arguments on both sides, and even seen how later cases have changed the way the court thinks about cruel and unusual punishment. What's the bottom line? What should our listeners, especially those in the legal field, take away from all this?
You know, I think the main takeaway is that the Rummel case, even though it's about one man and what happened to him, it really represents these much bigger issues that we're still dealing with today. It's about the relationship between the federal government and the states, the role that judges play in shaping policy, and how our understanding of justice is always changing.
It reminds us that even cases that seem pretty simple on the surface can bring up some really deep questions about the law and about our society.
Absolutely. And for people in the legal profession, I think Rummel shows how important it is to think critically about the law, question the things we take for granted, and speak up for change when it's needed. The law isn't set in stone. It changes as we come up with new interpretations and as our values as a society evolve.
It's like that quote, I think it was Justice Brandeis who said it, about the court being there to protect minorities, and especially the smallest minority of all, the individual.
That's a powerful idea. And it's especially relevant when we're looking at cases like Rummel, where the rights of one person are going up against the power of the whole state.
Well said. So to our listeners, we'll leave you with this. Think about Rummel v. Estelle. Think about the arguments on both sides. Think about what you consider to be a just punishment. And then most importantly, talk about these issues. Debate them. Because these aren't just abstract legal questions. They're questions that affect all of us and shape the kind of society we live in.
Couldn't have said it better myself. I've really enjoyed this deep dive with you.
Me too. And until next time, keep learning, keep asking those tough questions, and keep diving deep.